Welcome everybody back to Veil of Sound, and if you follow us closely, which I hope you do, you will have seen that a few days ago we launched a premiere for a band that took our hearts by storm. And I know I will mispronounce the name anyway, but welcome to the second part of our Vectlös week. And I'm very, very happy to have one of the guys here on the show with us, Truls. So first of all, Truls, thanks for joining.
Thank you for having me on. It's part of awesome.
Our pleasure. First question here on the Veil of Sound is usually the question about band shirt, merch, whatever you are wearing, as long as you're not showing us any pants.
Actually, I got this sweater on that doesn't have anything on it currently, but underneath it, I have this shirt. I don't know if you can see it. It's one of my favorite bands. That's almost some skin down here.
Right?
Puke Wolf, yeah. One of my favorite bands. I try to wear that as often as I can. So to support underground music, right?
Yeah. Before anybody asks, I once again wear Amen Ra.
Good choice.
I gotta wear my heart on my sleeve sometimes.
Yeah.
And Tools. First of all, thanks for letting us do that premiere a few days ago. And, you know, maybe we have to talk a little bit about the band before we talk about the record in general. So, what do you do in the band for all those who don't know Vectlös too much?
I'm the singer of the band, and I write the lyrics. For a band as well.
And can you explain, I mean, like, we've already talked it before, so the name of a band basically translates to weightless.
Yeah.
How did you come up with a name for this band? Because thinking about it, I would say that it's a little bit of a paradox. We will talk about the topics of many of the songs, but, you know, connecting those two is not the easiest way. So how did you come up with the name of the band?
The whole origin of our band was that this place in our hometown, Aalborg, in Denmark, we got this awesome venue called Tusindfod that I'm also managing. And we booked this band called Vigedot from Belgium.
Yeah.
And that was way...
The Dordenhebben at court.
Exactly, yeah. And it was on the first of those records. And they were not like a big band by then. And it was Tuesday or something in Aalborg. And it's a really small city we live in. And then we thought, okay, if we just put them up on a Tuesday, 10 people will show up. And then we decided, okay, I was not in a band at that moment. For the first time in my life, I was not in a band. And I said to my friend, Frederik, that's in the band, he plays guitar in Vectlös, should we do this band? We got 3 months to start the band, to record, to write all the songs and rehearse them and have an opening act for this Vigedot. And if we do that, then probably like 30, 40 of our friends will show up. And then we have like a decent amount of people for Tuesday, 50, 60 people or something like that, hopefully. If everything went as we thought it would, yeah, let's do that. That's a cool, like, let's try to do something weird. And then if it sucks, then we just leave it behind us and then we'll never play again. That was like the whole thought of the band. Play this one time and then move on. And then we got two of our friends to play the drums and the bass. And then we started writing these songs. I should come up with the lyrics for the songs, the riffs that the band made. And I jokingly felt like he said, like, oh, this is like kind of black metal. We're moving in that direction. And we didn't have like time to like fine tune the sound of our band because we had such a short span. And then jokingly felt like he said, write something about Norwegian forests or death and mayhem or something like that. That's what black metal bands do. I said, well, that I can't do that. That would not be honest. Try to write as honest lyrics as I can. And then in that same period of time, it felt like a lot of people that I knew died or like were facing death in some kind of way. And then I thought, maybe that makes sense. That's at least some part death, but in a serious manner, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I can stand behind this and I want to show the people that I know that are facing trauma, right? I love you. That's basically, and that was the first lyric that I actually wrote for this, for one of the songs, I love you, for one of my close friends, my dear friends. And then we should come up with a name. We had like, didn't have a lot of time. And then at that time we came up with another band name that we actually used for that show that we thought were kind of like dark and didn't represent the band. Some of the songs are moody and dark and stuff like that. And the themes of the lyrics are extremely dark in some way, but I always thought about these lyrics that it's based on love. It's coming from love and similar feelings, right? So we skipped that name because that was too dark, we thought. And then we named all, had all these Danish words that we put up on a sheet and, okay, we should find something that we feel like represents that love or that togetherness that we hope this band represents in some kind of way. And then Vekløs or Weightless, when we put that up, I felt like, of course, it's the obvious one, like to be weightless, like in space or, yeah. But it, to me, weightless could also be like if you're in love or if you're like drunk or feeling in some kind of way where you have it like you're kind of being lifted in some way, right? And
yeah.
And there are a lot of feelings where you're actually feeling weightless without actually being weightless. So it's, there is the obvious to be weightless, but I feel like it represents us because I can also be weightless. For example, when we play the song that you premiered a few days ago, it's for my, as I said, my close friend. And like whenever he's in the crowd, I feel weightless. When I'm staring in front of the crowd, singing these songs and singing to him, then I feel weightless. Does that make sense?
Very interesting. Yeah, it does make sense. Very interesting way. You chose your mother tongue for the lyrics, Danish. And I'm very, very sure that that was a conscious decision.
Yeah, it was.
Because, I mean, like, I'm very sure that you were also aware of the small or lesser accessibility of your songs because of that choice. I mean, like, let's be honest, how many people in the world speak Danish? You know, even a little less than German, which means something. But still, why Danish? Why not English?
As I said, like the first line that I wrote down was a line that my oldest son said to me a week before I got the news about my friend's disease. Elskar, I love you. And a bit more than that, I love you. And percentage is more than any number in the world could show. Or, yeah. So it was like, and he was really young. So it was kind of like out of place sentence that he put. And then I got that information about my friend at the same time. And then I feel like if I should do it in English, for example, now I can't. Obviously, Danish is my mother tongue. But just now trying to translate it to English, I'm stumbling upon the words and I can't really, I don't think if I'm doing this, trying to be as honest as possible, I think I need to write the lyrics in the language that I'm speaking every day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not speaking English that often. And I probably also dream in Danish, and like Danish is everywhere around me.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was, I feel like the weight of the words are, to me, are, it gives me more. And I think a lot of people resonate more with, at least in Denmark, even though there's a lot of people from outside of Denmark that are ordering a record and, well, I can't understand these lyrics, but goddamn, it's emotional or whatever. Like,
yeah.
I feel like music can translate I listen to a lot of French music and a lot of Swedish music that I do not understand every word, or maybe less than half or something. But I feel the honesty, and I feel like the desperation or emotional depth of it, or whatever it is. So in the past, in some of my previous bands, all the lyrics were in English. But then I actually had this one. It feels like when I'm talking to you and a lot of interviews that I know a lot of people that died, which I probably also do. But one time I was at this funeral with one of my old friends in this small city outside of our own city, our own hometown. And then like half the people at the funeral were like old punks, mates of mine. And it felt like, okay, when is the circle pit starting? Like, when are we doing what we always do? But of course we didn't, because it was a sad day and like everyone was sad, right? And then I felt I was in this band at that time. I got home and then I want to write like a tribute song to my late friend. But like the words that came out in English were, I didn't felt like it made him justice. If it didn't feel honest to me, to be honest. And then I started half of this of that song that eventually turned into a song in my old band. The first part, or the middle part, is in English. That was the first part I wrote, and then the rest was in Danish. And the Danish part is, I feel I'm more connected to that part of the song than the English part. And ever since, every band I've been in, I've written lyrics in Danish. So I haven't released a single line of English lyrics since that funeral.
So if I take it correctly, it's less of a question of authenticity, but more a question of connection, right? Which also then explains how good this record works when we come to the topics. You've already said it. It's a record that, to me, is on a similar emotional level as Touché Amore's Stage 4, because both records talk about death, about losing people, and also having to cope with that. And going away from the question of the language, but how difficult was it for you to write all these songs or these lyrics?
Yeah, because the songs, I don't think I wrote a single part. Like, I didn't write any music at all. That's Frederik Jeppe and To Be Work, 100%. I think when we started, we had like two or three songs at that first show that I mentioned just before. That some of them, that's, I think that's ones on, two of them are on the first EP, 7-inch we made. And I think actually it made, because there was such a rush to have a band ready in 3 months for that show. And I think that actually helped me. I didn't overthink the lyrics, or like, holy shit, what am I going to do on that stage, and what am I actually singing about? So I think that actually helped me get started, because it's really difficult to. I don't think it was difficult to write them actually, the lyrics, but it's really really difficult for me singing them. And
you mean on stage?
Sometimes, yeah. Actually, sometimes when we're playing these songs, it's really hard for me, and especially that song that you premiered is really hard for me, because that's the only song on the record where the person that we're singing about is actually still alive, and he's living in Copenhagen, and whenever we play in Copenhagen, he's there. It's really really hard, and I can hear, like, whenever we play over there, I can see and hear people crying in front of the stage, and it affects you. And but also other places when we play these songs, my biggest son, he's just going to bed, so that's why I wake. So it can be really hard singing these songs, for sure. And sometimes I also think that sometimes I think to myself, like, maybe just before we play shows, okay, why did I do this? Like, because it can be really tough. And but yeah, originally we named the songs after the people, because it's real people. These songs are about, each song is for or about a person that I know that died, except for that one, that for my friend. And then originally they were named after the people. We changed that to have these extremely long song titles instead.
Yeah.
And that was a conscious decision, because at some point I felt like it came too close, and so I wanted
too
maybe
personal?
To distance myself a bit. No, because they are extremely personal, and no matter what I do, I can never run away from, and I don't want to run away from the lyrics and what they are about. But it was my sister-in-law, like one of the songs, the first song on the record was a song for her when she was facing cancer, and it was like a song for her, like, let's beat this disease, like, get better, right? Promise me that. And then we made the song, and she sadly died and then left behind three-year-old, my old three-year-old niece. And then we, like, the song took a different turn, and then it became a song for her, like her daughter instead. Then I decided we should not name these songs after the people, because that was a tough one for me.
I can imagine. Yeah. I can imagine.
That was why we changed the names of the songs. But yeah, it's extremely difficult singing these songs.
I mean, like, I can only imagine, because, you know, I can only imagine how difficult it must be to perform them when it's already so difficult to talk about them. And it's also interesting. Very often we talk to people and they say, like, okay, music is my catharsis. I can let it all out. I can vent the feelings that I have. But when I'm talking to you, it seems as if, and maybe that's because of a topic, there is no venting, there is no catharsis, because, well, three out of these people are dead. And, you know, catharsis means that you can get clear with that in a way. Would you say that these songs can never, and these this topic, the way you approach it, cannot deliver any kind of catharsis?
I think they can, and I think they also do that for me from time to time. I think it's really important. I think these songs are important, but maybe when I wrote the lyrics, I'm not sure that I knew what I was actually doing. It's not like. But then I think after we played the first show we played, and it was during the day and sunlight, and we're all wearing shorts and like, let's try to do this. The first show after
after the Wiggy Dot shows.
Exactly. And played the songs, and it was very emotional for me. But then after the show, Silent kid came up to me, and he told me about a personal story about someone he lost that. And when he heard our songs, he was—that was what he needed. That was what he needed at that moment. And he was thankful that we sang these songs, and he could relate to them, even though they are my personal stories. Then, okay, then he said to me, that one song he played—that's me. I think for him that was catharsis, right?
Yeah.
And it was also—it is that for me as well. And after almost every show we play since then, people are like, when I'm standing in the merchandise table, people are coming up to me and telling a personal story about someone they lost or someone that's fighting against death. And that the first time for me it was say that again, what did you just say to me? I was a bit surprised about that kid that came up to me. But after I had a talk with him and we chatted quite a bit, then I thought, well, actually, maybe these songs can be used for something. Maybe they can give people passes. Maybe they can give people solace or like some kind of relief. And then thought about that. And the next show we played, again, someone came up to me and told a personal story. And then I was prepared for that. And then I gave that person time. And ever since, almost every time we play, someone come up to me and tell a personal story about someone they lost or someone close to them, or maybe talking about themselves as well. And I think that's, I'm actually kind of proud that
should be
just that one at a show could relate or use that for something. Then that's catharsis to me. And then it's all worth it if there's maybe just that one person comes up to me. So I think it started the first song, as I said, is that one from my friend. And then what do you do when you're in your 30s and you get a phone call from a close friend that's saying to you, well, I'm dying. You're used to hanging out and used to having fun and just like be friends, right? Be close friends. What do you do in your 30s? Like, I could imagine if 60s or something, then maybe it would make more sense. But like, I think none of us were ready for that. And then that first song and those first lyrics were, that was catharsis to me because I got in the rehearsal room and then I just screamed those lyrics out as loud as I could to get it out. Because what do you do when you're like, I'm a young man? For me, I simply didn't have the words, even though I was sad enough used to losing people early on in my life, like family. But I didn't know how to react, simply. Yeah. I tried best friend I could, but it was, I think most of us would react in the same way as I did. Like, I don't know. I know what you mean.
I think it's that moment when a friend calls you and tells you, you know, I have this disease and I might be dying. It's one of the hardest moments. I can still remember the moment when one of my closest friends called me shortly before Christmas 2018 and said, like, I got Hodgkin's cancer, and I didn't even know the word before, and I was like, so what are the chances? And she was like, chances are good, but it's going to be a hard ride. And I still remember that as clear as day, because, you know, I had just turned 40 a few months before, and I was just like what you said, you know, feeling this this weightlessness, you know, carelessness about things, you know, you know, life is good. And then she called me on a Monday, and the day after my mom called me and told me that she again had cancer, and I was like, okay, fuck the world. And that is this moment, you know, I can totally relate to that, because for all those teenagers and twins out there, enjoy the time, because there will come a moment when you get that first call from a friend of yours. And then all of a sudden you realize, okay, now, whether I like it or not, I'm an adult.
Yeah.
And that is, yeah, I can understand that. And I can understand the force that you are describing, you know, shouting out those lyrics. And I can also totally relate to what you said, you know, people getting through situations like that because maybe one of your songs helped you. For me, that song was and will always be Benediction by Touche Amore. Yeah. And I guess even when I'm 80, You could wake me up at 3 a.m. and be like, finish this sentence. And you start with, it was an ugly day, and my next two words will be in Glendale. It's just the way, you know, there are certain songs that carry a few. But then again, I can also see that what you're saying, this, for a lack of a better word, joy that is given to you when somebody describes exactly what you have just described. The joy of helping people. However, there is one line in one of your promos that I would like to talk about, because I have still been thinking about it since I've read it. In one of your promos, I found the line, the undeniable beauty of life and death.
Yeah.
Can death be in any way beautiful to you? Other than the relief that somebody is on the other side.
This would probably be a bit easier to say in Danish, but that would probably not go here. I'll try my best to explain it. I think the reason for that line is in that song that you just premiered, there is a line called where I'm singing "Livet er smukt, derfor gør det ondt," which roughly translates into "Life is beautiful, and that's why it hurts." I think to me, there's one thing we all share, and that's we're gonna die.
Whether we like it or not.
Yeah, hopefully way down the line, right? But we're all gonna die at some point. And I think the sooner you are aware of that and the depth of that, the more beautiful your life will be.
Yeah.
And the more creative, the more curious, the more the more life and light can you put into your life, I think, because then you know there's an expiration date. And I learned that pretty early on when my father died, and I think it took some time to realize that because I was just a kid when that happened. But I think when I look back at it, that sadly enough, because I'd rather have my dad, of course, but I think that over time made me realize how much I love my family and how much I love my friends and how grateful I am that I have a cool family and some of the best friends in the world. And I'm very grateful that I have this music community around me that can lift you up, right? And I think that's the reason for that line, is that death is never beautiful, but the more you are aware of where you're going to end up, let's say that, the more beauty you're allowed to have in your life. I think a lot of people live a life where they're not like they have hate in their life and in their hearts, and then one day I think they realize, okay, I pissed it all away because I was not able to let in, like, I'm doing like this real death, right? And real life, because they replaced that with something else. Because, and of course, you can have real beauty and real life and love in your life without knowing death, as I do. Of course, you can do that, but at least to me, and I think for a lot of people, your life will be richer if you know death.
That you have a different kind of appreciation for it, right?
Yeah, exactly. there's we have in a booklet on our LP, we have this quote in Danish that this my friend that this song is about. He has this podcast about cancer that he has with a friend that sadly recently passed away. Where they were both cancer patients, and they have this quote of the day. In each finishing each episode, this quote of the day, and there was this quote. I'll say it in Danish, and I'll try to translate it afterwards. Der er liv i døden og død i livet, og måske mest liv i livet, hvis døden er med i det. I'll try to translate that. There is life in death, and death in life, and maybe the most life in life, if death is a part of it. And I think that actually sums up where I'm coming from with this, and why I try to this for me and for us as a band. This record is about love and kinship, and to be kind and to be the best person you can be. And I think for me, at least, and for a lot of other people, you can only be that if you know there's an expiration date on this life.
Yeah, I know what you mean. However, I totally agree with that on the one hand. On the other hand, I also have to say that the passion that you can feel for your friends and for your children and for the future of our planet can also go along with some very strange, not strange, very strong animosities towards people who try to make life worse. You know, in Germany, we right now have a big, big discussion going on. And I must say, there are certain tendencies in Germany's political system that I hate with all of my heart. But I think one thing is clear. In the end, it all goes to the same way, you know, appreciation for life, for our diversity, for our way of living that we have to secure for us, for our children, grandchildren, and so on. So, yes, yeah. I can understand that.
I think I'm not completely sure what you're talking about in the political system in Germany, but I'm pretty sure I can imagine where it stems from.
Let's say we have some right-wing fuckers trying to take over.
That was what I was thinking about, and we got the same thing in Denmark.
Yeah.
So I hate that with all of my heart as well. And yeah. I hated the genocide in Palestine with all my heart as well. And there's a lot of things around the world that I hate with all my heart, but that's not the same as me having hate against the world or anything like that. So it's like hate is a reasonable feeling, and it can be very useful and valuable at times. Of course it can, because you need people to hate also to know who you love, right? In a way. But I think that's a different path or a different conversation, I think, because
I agree with you.
In previous bands, I've been very political in my lyrics and such, but I try to keep that out, because I think like if you're not against the genocide in Palestine, for example, then you're just an asshole. I don't want to go into further conversations, basically. Of course, there are layers and there are discussions worth having and such. But if you appreciate that, then you're just an asshole.
Yeah.
In the discussion, right? And sadly, we do have people that have the time of their lives down there, right? So it's not like that. And I think... I think hate is fair enough, but I think I'm less hateful due to the fact that I know what love is. And if you do not know what love is or the feeling of love, then you'll never be the better example. Because then, let's say you become in charge of a political system or whatever it is, then you just replace this kind of hate with this that kind of hate, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you will never totally be the true. Better example. So that's why you be kind, like be generous and be the best example, right? Need to be a path to a better world, like both in political, as you're talking about here, but also like what our record is about, basically. So, yeah.
It's good that you get the swing back to the record, because there is one thing that we also should talk about, which is amazing on the record itself, is the highly eclectic nature of your song structures. You know, we have some bits that are a little post-rocky, others are screamo, a lot of course, post-hardcore, also some black metal parts. I mean, like, is that a sign for an eclectic taste of all four members of Vectlus?
Yes, in some parts it is. We did this interview once where we had to pick two songs each, some of our favorite songs, and they were in all directions. And I like that. And it says a lot about the scene. I'll do like this. The scene in the hometown all, because we do not have scenes for anything. It's one big music community, and we draw from different genres. You can not find like four people that will be into the same kind of music. So whenever we play outside of Aalborg, for example, in Copenhagen, it's very clear to me what type of show or event we're playing. Oh, today it's a post-hardcore show. Oh, tomorrow it's a black metal show, whatever. And in Aalborg, it's like, okay, this is a music show or a punk show or a metal show. Yeah. It's like it's broader, which means that people that are into punk, for example, come to the punk show, even though it's a hardcore show or pop punk or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah,
same metal. So we come from different backgrounds, and we're friends. We've been that for a lot of years, but we come from different backgrounds, but we still share this same idea of like, if it's cool music, fair enough. Then it's cool. Then we'll just do it. And I like that we do not have like this is not the right type of genre or type of music.
Yeah,
we tend to steer away from that. Is this cool? Let's do it. I like a lot of different types of music, and the same three other people do that as well. That's the one thing. But the other thing is that I think Frederik, who's the guitarist of the band, one of my dear friends, I think he's one of the most underrated songwriters in Denmark. And I'm pretty proud to be in a band with him, because he writes the coolest riffs and the coolest songs you could imagine. And then Jeppe, who's playing the bass, is a fucking talented bassist, and he's also writing a lot of the riffs and the song structures as well. And those two together, they're like, Lennon McCartney kind of thing, right? Just in type of music. And Tobias, he's a bit younger than the rest of us, but he's a fucking talented drummer as well, and he clicks on the music immediately, and like he reads it so well. So I think that is probably also the reason for this eclectic mix of music we have in our band. But thank you for saying that. It actually means a lot, because
I think it does. It's also the way something that surprised me was that. Was it the first tour or one of the first tour or shows that you did with nothing, which basically nobody would maybe think at first, but when listening to the record, it makes sense, you know? Did this tour, I mean, like, on the one hand, it probably brought a little bit of pressure, you know, you tour with nothing, come on. It's like,
it was just one show, but yeah.
Okay, but one show. And on the other hand, did it also show you, okay, we might be up to something with this band?
It was a opening show at this 2,000-foot venue that I talked about before. So we basically booked ourselves to that show. But again, it says a lot about Aalborg, is that there are not a lot of bands, and there are no shoegaze band, for example, in Aalborg. So last time they played in Aalborg, it was my old band that also played this kind of post metal thingy that opened for them. It was our second show, so of course it was a big deal for us to do that show. Mm-hmm. And the singer of the band bought our t-shirt after the show, and it was like he was really into it. And the singer from Müll, he was there as well, and he was like, oh, he booked us for their following tour as a support act for them as well. That was also pretty huge for us. So we felt like, okay, maybe we're onto something here. And at that show, three people came up to me after the show and gave me a personal anecdote of someone they lost. So, and that was the first time where I was ready for it. So we maybe thought that, okay, this could actually be a thing. It was 2 months or something after our first show. So at least we didn't suck. That was the start. And we didn't feel like, okay, we were off, or we didn't feel like nothing was obviously better than us, but we didn't felt like we were that bad. We felt like we could be on the same page as them, or posted with them just way down the line. Mm-hmm. So it was a big deal for us, even though we kind of booked ourselves to the show. But at least it was a test for us that we could do this, and it would be actually.
I think another proof for the huge appeal of your band is the fact that, and I counted it again today to make sure that I have the right number. There are 46 labels worldwide that are working with you on this release. Isn't that also some kind of proof? Okay, we got something good going on here.
I come from the north of Denmark, so I'm trying to not praise myself. So what I just said previously was, I was trying to convince myself to say that we're okay, because I don't want to go.
But how did you feel when you got so many labels saying, okay, we want to work on releasing, we want to work with you on releasing this record?
It was kind of extreme, to be honest. And I sent out this mail to a lot of labels, and there was actually also more than the 46 that said it was good, but they didn't have any money or blah, 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 different release plans or something. So it was kind of a big deal. And I think we have 2-3 Danish labels, and the rest do not understand a word of what we're singing. But again, it shows that music translates, like the feelings of not just the lyrics, but also music translate. So you do not necessarily have to understand the words, because you can enjoy it. Because maybe for some, the lyrics are just an instrument. It's not something in a pop song or something where you know all the words or something like that. And when we play shows, it's not like, sometimes we have people singing along, but it's not that often, even though some people know the songs. So it's not like a big sing-along, woo, something like that. It's more like a feeling, I think. Mm-hmm. And what I said previously, that I listen to a lot of French and Swedish music, sometimes also German music, where I do not understand a lot of what they're singing about. So I think it shows that music translates, and it maybe also translates in generations. So you can also find old music that you like, for example, that you not, maybe not, for some, do not make the test of time. So I think it's more of a feeling, and more like instead of like a personal connection to the songs for a lot of people, even though they are aware what they're about. And we made like small descriptions for each song, and someone actually also asked for English translation of the song, the lyrics. So, but I think it's a world record, the 46 labels.
Definitely. It's amazing. I've never seen such a long list.
No, and we have in the booklet, we have this whole page dedicated to logos. And on the other side, we have their contact information. It's like, it's we joked a bit about, like, if you're a DIY band, just look at that record and then contact all of those. And then,
That's true.
Like the old days, we had this book your own fucking life guide where you can, we're on the where I want to play in Berlin. Okay, who should I contact? I think this is kind of like the same.
It's very similar.
Open the book and see, okay, who should release the record, then I'll start there. So we're really proud of the record, and we're really proud that people have faith in us, the record labels.
Yeah.
Also now people are starting to pre-order the record, and it's holy shit, why do someone in the US want our LP on a CD? Or why do people from Iceland, people from, like, why do they want our record? I still can't believe that. So yeah, it blows our minds, and it means a lot to us that people connect with it, I would say.
Something that in a way is also mind-blowing for a lot of people outside Denmark, and I think even more so outside of Europe, is for lack of a better word, the explosion of the Danish scene. We have a nearly uncountable number of great Danish bands coming out, you know, or recently coming out. We have Ice, LLLN, Mole, Hexes, Afski, now you guys, and many, many others. Do you have any explanation for that? Why there are so many awesome Danish bands at the moment?
I think it's a sum of some parts. I think I showed you my Pukwolf shirt just before. That's a band that are extremely underrated, if you ask me. And I think a lot of the reason for these bigger bands, like also coming outside of Denmark and playing shows in Europe and the States and such, is I think we have like a really strong underground scene of bands, Pukwolf, all those bands, in like in, they're in a sphere where they might not be as big, a lot of these bands, but there's always a local support act. There's always these bands to get inspired by.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is extremely important. And then in this underground scene, we do not have a lot, but we have quite a few venues that are actually taking these bands in. In the old days, it was way harder to get shows if you were an underground alternative metal punk band, whatever. It was way harder. But with the internet and social media, like, felt like everyone had a chance to get out and play those 5, 6, 7, 8 awesome underground venues we have in Denmark. And most of these bands are also able to play some of the smaller festivals we have, primarily in Copenhagen, but also in Aarhus, and maybe also in Aalborg as well. Like, there's like each year the new or more bands get a chance to play these smaller festivals that are still taking in outside names and are growing a name in on their own terms. I think that could be a reason for it. And then there's also again the bigger festivals like Roskilde Festival, Copenhagen and stuff like that, they actually also take in, that's probably the bands that you just mentioned that mostly take in, but they also dive sometimes a bit deeper in the mold. And I think that's also, if you want to have like that's something to strive for, okay, maybe we should be the next Copenhagen band, or maybe we should be the next Roskilde Festival band, something like that. So there's like this organic ladder of steps you can take up. Of course, you need like a roof in the Danish scene because we're a small country. But I think those things could be a reason for it. But I think actually it's the most important part is that each major city have their own bands within this sphere of metal, post-metal, whatever we call it. I'm not that good at genres, but you know, of the bands you just named there, each city have their own local heroes, so to say. And I think that inspires people, and maybe they play together and grow connections, and then together can lift it. I don't know how it is in other countries, but it might be the same. But at least in Denmark, I don't feel it's a competition. I think we're making each other better, and I think we're making the whole scene and the whole environment better, so we can grow together. I think that's those might be the, well, I don't know. Actually,
no, that's meant.
If I should say that, I would say something like that could be the reason for it.
Hmm.
But sadly enough, a lot of these people are actually pretty old, and most of them are men. And I think it's like the diversity, both in age, but also if you're a man or woman or something else. I think I would love to see younger people getting into this music, but it feels like it's a bit old man rock. It's like new.
Well, depending, of course, on how you define old, right?
Yeah.
The gender aspect that you're bringing in, that is definitely something that is not only true for Denmark, but for many other countries. I mean, although I would love to see more women on stage at our kind of concerts.
Yeah.
You just simply don't. And one should also be aware of that it never has been the way that there were, let's say, 20 women on stage at a six band festival. I would love to see that, but it's just never been the way. Maybe we're changing a little bit for the better, but that change is a slow change.
Yeah, sure. I think there's, as well in Denmark, there's a bit of change. I see a bit more women trying to get into this genre.
Yeah.
Convent is a pretty good example of that.
Yeah, that's true. What is the name of that Norwegian band? Witch Cult Satan? Something like that? But my friend
club.
But my friend Knut is always referring to when he's talking about one of the most interesting and most intense gigs that he has seen recently, when all of a sudden all the ladies are naked on stage and perform black metal as hell. I was like, okay, okay.
Yeah.
If the Chili Peppers did it, why not also women?
Yeah, for sure. And I think there's definitely room for that in this type of music.
Definitely.
Sure.
Definitely. But I would also say that there are more women in the black metal circles nowadays than there are in many, many other genres.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, think of Mirkur, think of Hulder from Belgium, Sylvain from Norway. There are loads of women on stage, and that is a very, very, very good thing. But there should be more. Sure.
Yeah, but I think it's a lot about representation, a lot about what do you see, right? This kind of genre, you know, it has a lot of different roots, but it's fairly new actually. If you look at it, of course you had like Neurosis and bands like that pioneered it in the 90s, but it's a pretty new thing, and it's a pretty new thing that it's like Neurosis used to be a small band, right? It's only in recent years that they became bigger.
Well, I think Neurosis has only for a short amount of time of existence been a small band. I think with Souls at Zero, they changed so many things in the genre and in the game that was clear very, very early on.
But I mean, it's not like
still they're not as big as their old buddies in Green Day.
That's true. And I think actually when both bands played Tusenfall that I talked about as well. And I think Neurosis, I think they had more people at their show than Green Day had at their show. So,
I, of course, depends on when both bands played. Green Day in the late 80s, 10, 20 people.
Yeah.
Neurosis in the late 80s, a little bit more.
Yeah.
But if anybody wants to know a little bit more about the old Gilman days in San Francisco, go back more or less exactly 1 year and listen to the interview that we did with Noah Landis from Neurosis, and he has a lot to say about the old Gilman Day shows with with Sam I Am and with Neurosis and Green Day on the same bill, lots of others.
Crazy.
So, Truls, first of all, thanks for all the insight into the new record and also into the place where a lot of the songs come from. But of course, nobody leaves the Veil of Sound interview without having to stand the infamous quickfire round. You will always get two alternatives, like which Green Day album is better, Dookie or American Idiot? Of course, it's Dookie. But you'll always get two alternatives and have to choose. And as I've seen some of the records on your shelf back there. By the way, is the one next to Springsteen? Is that the Beach Boys or Turbo Negro?
That is the Beach Boys.
Yeah, Pet Sounds. Yeah. Okay.
If you think some of them are not cool, then it's probably my girlfriend's. I got their record over there.
Yeah.
Is under there, like having signs on where they are on that cover, because they are on all the band members on the cover. It's like taken from a drone or something. That's actually, you don't see that when you see the record, but it's a fucking awesome cover, actually.
Yeah, I mean, although I have to say that the last Nothing cover, not the one with Full of Hell, but their own last one, that was like, that was some pretty ugly cover. I'm like, come on, who's in there? Great music, but the cover on it is like, it's okay.
I don't think they're like it. They're all this cover is awesome. If you know like the, if you can see what it actually is, but if you when you know what it is, it's not that cool, to be honest as well. So I don't think they're the cover bands.
Let's give you a hardcore band to start with. Touche Amore, which record should it be for you? Stage 4 or Parting the Sea Between Brightness and Me? I think I already know the answer.
That's definitely Parting the Sea Between Brightness and Me. It's also up here somewhere. Yeah, for sure. The other record is great, but yeah.
Would you agree that Tilde, the opening song of Parting the Sea, might be the best opener ever written?
No, but it's good. It's fucking awesome, but it's not the best.
Let's stay in that hardcore realm a little bit. Suffocate, For Fuck's Sake, or Respire? Which one would you rather listen to right now?
Suffocate, For Fuck's Sake. I'm actually trying to book them for our festival in Aalborg later this year. Don't tell anyone.
Well, I mean, like, this interview is out on January, what is it, 28th?
maybe too late. I'm actually also on a...
Maybe you write them before the 28th, right? So
yeah. Maybe I'll try. I'll do the email after we're done. I'm actually also on... there's this cool dude from Sweden that's doing this post-rock album where he's asking a lot of people to sing. He's writing all the music, and then he's sending something on top of this. And he asked me to sing on one of the songs, and on that song, Suffocate, For Fuck's Sake, is doing like the intro monologue to that song. So that's fun. Mm-hmm. Life goals.
So keep me up to date for that one.
Sure thing.
Death Haven, which one would you rather listen to? Sunbather or Ordinary Corrupt Human Love?
That would be Sunbather.
It's for me, that is a very, very tight race. Yeah, I've seen it. But that is a very tight race. I have to admit that Sunbather for a month in my life was my go-to thing to listen to fall asleep.
Nice one. It took me some time to get there, I think. But I think that the newer, bit more shoegazy thing, I think it's actually pretty cool.
I like Ordinary Corrupt Human Love. The Infinite Granite thing afterwards still has to grow on me a little bit. But those two records, Sunbather and Ordinary Corrupt Human Love, those are awesome records. Also Roads to Judah.
Yeah, for sure.
Two Belgian bands that you have to choose from. Oathbreaker versus Amen Ra.
like sometimes like football games, they ended a draw, right? Can I do
no,
that?
No. Vista, here at Vivelo Sound, we don't do draws. It's always someone winning.
Okay, then today Oathbreaker wins and yesterday Imran. Okay.
That is okay. Two bands by someone who's also already been interviewed by us, Alex CF. Two of his bands, Fall of Ifrafa versus Lightbearer.
I would say Lightbearer. Yeah, they're actually, we sent out this promo material and they're actually the first band that we listed as, if you like this band, you probably also like our band. So I would go for them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, both are awesome bands.
Neurosis, you get two albums to choose, Through Silver and Blood or As I Always... A Sun That Never Sets. I always mix it up. So, Through Silver and Blood or A Sun That Never Sets?
That would probably be Silver and Blood, I would say. I think the earlier Neurosis might resonate a bit more with me than your mm-hmm. stuff, I would mm-hmm. say. But it, yeah. They haven't put out albums that are not good, I think. So
yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
There is no Neurosis album, but it's bad.
Salt and Sarah.
And maybe in a good way we can say like there will never be, because that band is done.
Yeah.
For exactly. other reasons.
Yeah. Don't be an asshole.
Yeah, let's go back to the black metal side of things a little bit. I'll give you two Scandinavian bands. Faidra, and I think he's from Sweden, if I remember correctly, versus Afski from Denmark. And don't forget patriotism on this one, just for music.
What was the first band again?
Faidra, I'm not sure how to pronounce it. Faidra.
Yeah, okay. I would say Auski. Mm-hmm. But like that straight up black metal. Mm-hmm. I'm not really that much of a fan, to be honest. I know it's kind of weird playing this kind of band, but I might not be true or anything, but I don't care.
I'm not sure if you know the next two bands, as they're both from Canada.
Oh. But
one of those black metal scenes at the moment that I think is way too underrated. Nordic Winter versus Giver. And Giver, G-I-F-R-E.
Yeah, that's the only band of those two I've heard, to be honest.
Which is not nobody can know everything.
There is this Canadian band called Then. I'm not really sure how to say it. Then the Facts.
Fantifax F. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is an awesome band. Well, like, yes.
Yeah, that is like in the black metal realm kind of things, right? I'll go with them then. Is that okay? That was not an option. Sorry.
I was thinking if they would call them black metal. I think Fantic Fexaf is everywhere. Everywhere.
Yeah.
And one band that you listed in your promos, and I will take that band as a starting point. You've listed Omega Massif right from around the corner here, like 30-40 kilometers from where I live. Omega Ooh. Massif are, of course, unfortunately not existing anymore, but there are two follow-up bands, Cranial and Phantom Winter. Which one is more to your liking?
I would say Phantom Winter.
Mm-hmm.
But to be honest, none of them are in Omega Massif are like fucking awesome.
Yeah. And, but I also have to say that, you know, if out of those three, I might probably always pick Omega Massive. Pretty sure I would. But I also have to say that both follow-up bands are amazing at what they do.
Yeah, yeah. But I think there's also a part of nostalgia when you like do these quick questionnaire, right?
Of course.
I would say music is like, for me, it's often like I listen to a lot of new music, of course, but like if you pull it on the pull the nostalgia card, I could probably say where I was when I listened to that first Omega Massive record, and a lot of other, some of my favorite records here and in my collection in there, because I think a lot of music is tied to times we've had or nostalgia or something like that, and those two bands, I do not see them fit in a context of nostalgia, at least not yet.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's why I tend to say that their first band was way better. I don't know.
I know what you mean. I mean, music is always connected to time. Music is always connected to a time for us as listeners. But at the same time, with your own band, with Vectless, you've just shown that music is also always connected to time when we talk about the band itself. Many of the songs have a very, very personal, biographical background and connection for you. And I have to say, I think that when it comes to, for lack of a better word, let's call it blackened post-hardcore or whatever, I think for that sound that you produced with Vectless, I think it will be hard this year with 2024 to come up with a more meaningful record. So that is something that you can definitely pin onto your hat and take pride in it. And we say thank you for the music. I say thank you for the interview, for all the time. And for everybody out there, if you like what you've just listened to, remember, today is Sunday the 28th, if you listen to it on the date of publication. On Friday, you will have your chance of listening to the full strength of Vectless' debut 12-inch. There are 46 ways to get it. buy it if you like what we do here at the Veil of Sound. Maybe give us a subscription here on YouTube. Maybe give us a like on our socials. If you want to do a little bit more, you can also donate money. We have had people donating via YouTube nowadays. We've also have our Patreon where you can support us a little bit. And the most important thing and the most important way of supporting is always be a friend, tell a friend. We will keep on spreading the word about Vectless in the upcoming days. You will get a review in a few days about the record. On Friday, it's time. Listen to it. And now, Truls, for you, your chance for final last words.
thank you so much for doing this. It was this conversation is cool. I don't know. I like conversations with people that I feel some kind of kinship with, or spirit mates, if you can say that, and I feel like I have that with you.
That means
a lot to me, and
to us as well, and to me as well.
It makes it all worth it to give something, because I feel I get at least the same or maybe more back from you.
That's something that we try to do here. So, yeah, my friend,
it means a lot.
Enjoy the rest of your evening.
You too. Thanks for having me here.
I still have some correction work to do for school for tomorrow. So.
Yeah.
See you around, hopefully, and enjoy the rest of your evening. Bye-bye.
You too.
Bye.